This is the Faraway Farm Boy Podcast, episode number 23. My guest today is a farmer from Chilliwack, BC. He and his wife's family manage a few different locations. He and I have been friends for a few years, and I commend him for stepping up to meet the challenges that face him and other young producers involved in family operations all over Canada. It's not easy managing a dairy farm while raising a family and being a good dad, and all the other things you have to do. Dairy farmers have to wear many different hats, and although we like to pat ourselves on the back quite a bit, I think we still have to acknowledge that it can still be challenging. Anyway, that said, here's a guy who is the chair of Mainland Young Milk Producers and part of one of the best managed large farms in the valley. Please welcome my friend, Greg Streuker. Greg, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Is it on?
Yeah, it's on.
Oh,
we're
okay.
Live.
Oh, wow, okay.
Listeners all over the world. Actually, I think we just added Australia. Listeners in Australia, so shout out to them.
Do you know how many, like, where and how many people have listened to each thing? Each, like, episode?
I have some of those metrics or whatever, but there's a few people.
Cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So explain to our listeners what you do here on the farm.
Okay. Oh, my name's Greg Streuker.
Yeah.
I run Riverbend Dairy. We're in Chilliwack, BC. We milk about 270 cows at the moment. We're part of, I guess, a larger business, Cedarbrink Dairy. So that's another dairy we run in Rosedale, where we milk about 550 cows there.
You guys are at 550 there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So I guess just give or take 800 between the two of us. So.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, those are the two dairies, and then we run a feedlot up in Merritt. We own that with one other dairy from the valley here. There's about 1,000 head up there. Just our young stock from about 7 months up until 2 months or 2 weeks before calving.
Your dry cows are up there, too?
Our dry cows are here.
Oh, okay.
So our dry cows are all in the valley. They're actually all at Riverbend.
Oh, okay,
so,
yeah.
And then we also have some hay and grain land in Vanderhoof that's just kind of new to us in 2 years.
Yeah, I forgot about that, at least for a second.
Yeah, so it's enough to keep us occupied and busy, and yeah. We just kind of in the last few months took on the A2 thing. We're one of the four farms for Agri-Foods that's producing the A2 milk for their kind of new venture. So,
that plant is in Burnaby?
Yeah, just Annecy's Island.
Hmm.
So, somewhere.
No idea.
Pretty sure. Yeah. So, that's new to us. We started shipping in the middle of December, so.
How'd you guys do that again? Because you were breeding for A2 randomly, kind of, for a while.
We actually weren't. Like, I mean, if we look back, like, about half of the sires we were using were A2. But it wasn't intentional. Those were just bulls that chosen for our program. So,
yeah.
But since this came up, then we went through, we tested all about whatever, including our dry cows, 900 head or so, give or take.
On both farms?
On both farms. Tested everything, did a tissue sample, sent those away. And then once we got all the results, that gave us about 300 head, give or take. And then we moved those all to Riverbend.
That's crazy. And they were all different lactations in it.
Yeah.
Like, it all ended up fine.
It was real close, yeah. Like they
Well,
say,
no older cows probably, right? Like, probably.
Yeah, yeah. No, because 33, like, the going number is, like, 33% of Holsteins are A2 without you ever even breeding for it. It's just naturally how it works out.
Right.
With their proteins, either they're an A1, A1,
yeah.
Or A1, A2.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it worked out. We were around 37%, I think. So we're
right.
Just above average.
And you guys were accepted into the program that Agri-Foods had before you started doing this, or?
Yeah. So
we
did all the testing and everything because they picked us as one of the farms to ship.
Right.
So it wasn't really anything on our radar before that. We weren't choosing to go A2.
Right.
It just this came up and we thought we could make it swing with testing all the cows from both farms and moving them to here.
Yeah.
And then now this is just strictly A2 farms. So It changed things a little bit now. We can't.
Well, way more money. I've seen like all sorts of BMWs in the yard. And...
yeah, it's... No, it's a 5 cent premium on your liters shipped. So right now it's like on our total volume for the month, it might work out to like a penny a liter, hardly, just because it's such a small market so far.
What do you mean? I thought you said 5 cents a liter.
Yeah, so, but it's a pool. So they put in their orders for the week and then, you know, that all gets picked up.
Yeah.
And then it goes from... all four farms is the pool. So wherever the milk comes from, it doesn't matter. And then it all gets split up and we get it accordingly based on how many liters we ship for the month. So yeah, it's a bit, that's why it's not 5 cents. Like if all farms were shipping 100% of their milk, we would be getting 5 cents per liter. But not all farms are shipping all their milk because it's such a small market. Yeah, they don't need it all.
Oh, so they booked extra milk.
Yeah. Okay. They took on enough that they're good for, you know, the foreseeable future.
Yeah, yeah, growth. You don't want to be short type of thing.
Exactly.
It's pretty interesting, the whole the milk allotment or whatever, dealing with processors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Being on the board a little bit, you see a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a whole...
Yeah,
that's the whole thing, right? That's somebody's job.
Yeah, and then the orders, and I learned a bit more about it just talking to the milk board and volumes and what we're shipping and what they need and blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of just a learning curve. So it's been good.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of the second month, I guess, now, so...
Huh.
We'll see where it goes. Hopefully they keep growing and growing and we can ship all of our milk for it and it would be a good thing. So it's a bit of, there is some extra work to it. Like because we're A2, part of the A2 milk company's requirements is you need to be Validus certified, which is like kind of like a ProAction on steroids.
Yeah.
So it's
something in addition
to
your ProAction.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a lot of the same, SOPs and, you know, protocol stuff, I guess, but it's a lot more in depth. Like when the guy came and did our validation, it's something like 400 questions you go through.
Huh.
So, but it's a lot of good stuff too. It's, you know, one interesting part about it all is if you ever had an on-farm protest or something along those lines, like Validus will actually come and vouch for you and say like, this farm is Validus certified, and they will send out a representative to kind of
say that nothing has ever happened bad here,
and that we're
in the history
follow all the right standards and everything. So it's good. I think it's a good program.
Yeah, well, anything you can do to add a couple cents, you know, value added,
mm-hmm. and for the work that you put into it. To get a 5 cent premium is not, it's worth it. Getting going was a fair bit of work and
testing
cows and
all
the testing and, you know, that's was some work. But now that we're rolling, we send in a report once a month, and other than that, it's just everyday farming. So,
is there ever a market for like A2 and organic? Like, can you add any?
Value? Yeah, that's. Who knows? I don't know. I know a big thing for the A2 milk company is baby formula. Like that's kind of a huge part of their business that in Japan is like, in China, I think I want to say it's like 80% of their total business. Like fluid milk is really small.
Really?
In their total business.
Agri-foods?
No, Agri-foods is just fluid right now. That's all they sell. But if you go look at like, because A2 started, the A2 milk company started in New Zealand.
Right.
So where they're based out of, I think it's like 80% or more of their business, based out of New Zealand,
goes to China.
Yeah, as baby formula.
Well, because they had that big scandal in China for baby formula or whatever, that they're putting all sorts of melanin or something in there. So you can imagine. And baby food already is a huge market. Like, because everyone wants to feed their kids the best thing out there, right?
Yeah, and I know Asians are the ones that struggle with processing... Or not processing, like, what's the word I'm looking for here? digesting dairy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Great. So that's super racist.
It's true. Our coffee delivery guy is an Asian guy, and he said, I was explaining the A2 thing, and he goes, oh man, that's great, because so many Asian people struggle with
do you just make that story up?
Digesting dairy. No, I'm not, I promise. So that's why I think it's so big out there, because it, like, the babies can use it there. And
yeah,
I hope I'm not speaking out of the room, but what I'm saying is correct, but I'm pretty sure that is a large part of it, so.
And how's production on the farm?
Good. Yeah, we're rolling right along. I think we're, 34 liter average a day, something like that. So we're not the, you know, highest producing herd, but we do it for pretty cheap.
You guys are
so,
kind of a
35
commercial herd, right? You guys don't register and classify and all that stuff?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so.
Why not?
Just not our interest.
Yeah.
You know? I guess, would you call it a more commercial herd, I guess, maybe?
Right, yeah.
So, I think our numbers are, as good as most, but,
What's your herd age?
Oh, we're young.
Yeah?
We're young. I think we're, like, almost 50% two-year-olds.
Okay. You guys expanding, or...?
We just raise a lot more of our young stock just to keep our herd young.
Okay.
I don't know. Just... We have a lot of turnover, and I think...
That's something that I got to improve on, too. My call rate's so high.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm slowly getting better, but...
You know what
your call rate is? Too. Like, I'm at 45% heifers right now. Yeah.
I think we're... Or, do you know what your call rate is?
It's over 25%,
I think. Yeah, I think we try run about a 30, 35. That's what we try run.
Yeah.
Just keep our herd young, do it for cheap. No, I think we spend about...
Right, you guys raise all your heifers in merit, so it's a little bit cheaper.
Yeah. It's almost a wash, but, we can kind of quality control and...
How many heifers are there at that feedlot between you and Arts?
Just about just over 1,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they milk 500 or something.
Right around there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Huh.
So it's a pretty full house up there, too. We're kind of capped out for building up there at the moment, so... We just started, I say we raise a little more young stock than we should, but we're also maybe trying to cut that back. We just started genomic testing all of our calves.
Okay.
So we're kind of, try to wean out the bottom end that way.
Yeah.
Just get our numbers down a little bit. We're kind of out of, we've kind of been expanding for the last three to five years, we've really been expanding. Like when we moved here to River Bend, we were milking 125 cows, and April will be 4 years, and now we're up to 270. So
yeah, so I mean that's why you have a young herd.
Yeah,
you're always.
But even historically, Alfie and Nigel always ran a young herd too. Like Alfie always.
You guys do sell some heifers too. I should say that.
Yeah.
My dad's always pointing
your
cows out and.
What's really interesting is we actually bought a bunch of calves off your dad. Kind of over the last couple of years. No. And so when we're doing all the A2 testing, we're cruising along, punching ears, and that's a Grisnick one, that's a Grisnick one, that's a Grisnick one.
Yeah.
All of them were A2. So I sent
your
dad a picture. I said, we got a good screaming deal on these ones. They were all A2. Lost out on big money, but.
Huh. And so you see value in genomics and.
You know what? It's just like, I think years ago there was so much room, and this was before my time and probably even before Nigel's time, but so much room to grow
the cow,
like,
quality
in your genetics.
Yeah.
And I think that margin has become so small now that how do you track, because we're not a classified herd, so how do we track our genetics and know that we are still improving? We track everything else, it's just another, I guess it's a way we can track our genetics now.
Right.
So we kind of wean out the bottom end through that.
Yeah.
So we send all our tests in to Select, and then Chris from Select Sires kind of goes through, and if we have, he looks at kind of 6 month blocks.
Yeah.
And looks at what our projected calvings are and what we'll need down the road. And then if we have room to cull, then we will kind of cull at the bottom end just based on genomics.
Huh. Yeah, I was looking at, I don't fully understand genomics and that side of things yet, but Leighton was showing me a bunch of my genomic numbers, And he said, well, this is your highest parent average LPI, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know that cow, like big sway back looking thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's probably one of my worst heifers, but she had the best numbers.
Yeah, it's like, it's kind of a, I don't know, and some people totally don't believe in it, and
that's like one example, right?
Yeah.
But I'm sure it on average it,
if you just go by an average, and I don't know, you're probably like, it's gonna be right maybe 85-90% of the time. So
yeah,
you just gotta trust it. But you know, for us, it just, we wanna raise enough heifers that we can keep our call rate at what we want, and anything extra, you know, it just saves us money all the way through. If we can get rid of them now as a calf,
right? Yeah.
We don't get rid of them, you know, when they come in and calve as a 2-year-old, and then you look at them and go, ooh, this one's a bit of a dud. You know, we hopefully caught it at 2 months old and get rid of them at some point while they're still in the valley here.
Yeah, that would be ideal, yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, we had this big plan and we actually haven't called that many just because we don't have a ton of excess coming through at the moment. So, but it's also a way for us to track, just to keep track of our genetics, and hopefully we can look back in a couple of years and, you know, hopefully we can see some of our key genomic traits rising, right? So
yeah. So what are you breeding for now, like production or confirmation or
just
because you, that's what kind of you do on the farm, right? That sort of strategizing and
maybe if my dad wasn't the salesman for Select, you know, they kind of run the program, and you know, we just want a good rounded dairy cow. They can, you know, good production. We want to be good on their feet.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to be able to withstand what it takes to produce milk in today's dairy herds, right? So.
Yeah. So do you do some of the breeding, or because you got what, 3 or 4? I guess we should tell people you got double six herringbone, right?
Yeah.
So, and then freestalls with sand.
Yep, sand bedded. So we've switched to that 6 months after we moved here. We were on bedding at the other farm at recycled bedding, so we hauled that for the first 6 months, and then the warm weather hit, and oh, it was a nightmare. So we switched to sand right away and haven't looked back. So now both dairies are on sand, and it's like, it is just a world of difference.
You guys have access to a lot of sand here, like other parts of the world there's like no river.
Yeah.
And this is like quality river sand,
it is,
right?
Yeah, it's good sand. I mean, we haven't bought sand for a couple of years because our whole first year we bought sand
to fill
the
system.
We had no recycling. Well, we didn't have a sand lane or anything.
Oh yeah, right. You're
so
just
we just pumped it
pit.
Straight into the pit. But then after about a year, once our sand lane was installed and everything, we went in after pumping out in the fall and dug it all out and stockpiled it. So we still have probably 2 years worth of stock. So that worked really good.
And it dries out no problem? Like you stack it outside?
Our daily stuff?
Yeah.
It depends. Like it depends on the time of the year. Water is, you know, that's kind of the only downside to a sound system is they take lots of water. So you can make good sand, but you are adding water, which a lot of people, I guess, are scared of, but
What do you mean you're adding water?
Just to
clean
your
sand.
Yeah. So,
but your sand in the stack out back,
mm-hmm.
like, is it, it's dry enough to put in your stalls after a week, or how long do you guys leave it out there?
It sits for about a month.
Okay.
Before it goes back in the barn. So we have two separate bays. We'll fill one bay.
Oh, it's undercover? Like,
nope. It's just two little lockbox bays.
Oh, yeah.
We'll fill one and then bed out of the other one.
Yeah.
And then fill the other one and then bed out of the one we just filled. So it all depends on the time of the year. We can get away with...
Yeah, because I mean,
summer,
this time of year...
Beautiful sand.
Right.
Because it's dry. This time of year, you struggle more with rain, but then you have more water washing it. So it kind of... It's a fine line. I play with the settings a lot on our separator, and, you know, it all just makes a difference.
Yeah, because this time of year, Well, it rains twice in December, right? Once for 29 days and once for maybe 1 or 2 days.
Yeah, no. Historically, December, it's pretty wet. This year was actually really wet. I looked it up on October, November, December. We had just over 6 inches more rain than we had last year in the same 3 months.
Oof.
Which is tough when you're...
But you're saying that rain or whatever, it washes the sand in the pile a little bit too?
Yep.
What's your somatic cell at?
We average between 150 and 180. So.
Okay, yeah.
Somewhere in there. Yeah, no, the sand thing has been, it's unbelievable. You can't, like, with the, you don't get the bacteria growth in the stalls. Like, mastitis is not even something I think about on an average day. And when we moved here...
Well, it's because your call rate is like, just anyone over 100.
Hey, look at you wrong. Get out of here. No, no, no.
Off
no,
to the
because
Grisnik
you
farm.
you don't get rid of cows. And the odd one that will come through with mastitis, you treat her and she's back in and she doesn't skip a beat. Like, it, when we were on bedding and you would, you know, you have a cow come in with mastitis and you just shoot her. Like, she's done. Like,
that
just done.
Never happens.
Not anymore, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I haven't called a cow for mastitis in, I'm going to say, 2.5 years.
Huh.
Now, I still get the odd one.
Yeah.
But I treat
What do you usually get? Like, just environmental type?
Yep.
You never get...
not any coliforms or anything.
No.
A little bit chunky in the one quarter. You treat her for 2 days.
Yeah.
Once her withdrawal is up, she doesn't skip a beat.
So is there... There's no... like being with A2, you don't have to treat cows any differently.
No.
It's just solely the A2 and then a bunch of other stuff from Validus.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. No, there's not, it's not, there's no treatment requirements or anything like that. It's not organic in any way, so.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys got going up by Vanderhoof there? What's going on there?
So that was kind of a new venture. Started about 2 years ago. We grow hay and grain up there. We have about 2,500 farmable acres. About half
Great.
Of it's in hay and half of it's in grain. So about 600 acres of the hay is alfalfa, which we haul down to the dairies here. We kind of supplement our feed. So just as we've grown, we've gotten tighter for land. And
yeah, especially, I guess we should tell people that don't know the Fraser Valley. It's, what, 40,000 acres of the most fertile ground on Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
That's highly populated.
Pretty desirable farmland, so.
Yeah, surrounded by mountains, kind of an old riverbed type.
Yeah, so when land's 100,000 plus an acre to buy.
Great.
You know, you're paying minimum $1,000 an acre for rent now. It just is hard to pencil out, you know, unless you can get rid of manure directly on it.
Yeah, which is a big problem here in getting rid of manure, right? Like, that's not a problem anywhere else on Earth, basically. Well, like on the prairies, people will pay you.
It's not an issue for us right now. We're not there yet, but just...
Well, you dump in the river most of the
time. Yeah, I got a valve going straight there. No, it, you know, it just, we're fine. You know, all our nutrient levels are fine in our fields, but just having enough acres to feed all the mouths is, we've narrowed down on that since we've kind of grown, so.
And you don't want to live up in Vanderhoof, really, but you still want to.
Not at the moment. Who knows? Never say never.
But it pays to truck your hay down here, and then you guys truck something else back. And...
Right now, we're actually hauling chicken manure up there.
Right, yeah.
So we haul chicken manure up there as kind of a cheap fertilizer.
Right.
And we're trying to kind of build up nutrient levels in the soil up there. And then we haul all our hay back and it seems to be working. So
you guys
we
grow any,
green back as well.
You guys grow any canola this year up there?
No.
Shoot.
No. Yeah, well, even barley.
Yeah.
Barley prices are going up. So no, we just grow barley. This past year, we grew a little bit of wheat and faba beans just kind of as a trial.
Yeah.
The faba beans is something we're kind of looking at. We really do not know much about it, but we're hoping we can kind of
feed them.
Yeah, and replace maybe a bit of canola or something. Kind of a value-added crop for up there just to, you know, there doesn't seem to be much money to be made in grain farming on a small scale. So if we can grow a crop that's, you know, a little bit more work but adds a lot more value, it just, it helps the financial end of things too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then, we already talked about merit. You guys got a lot of stuff going on. So what do you do to, are you ever going to merit and doing work there? Or what
I
do you do
most,
for employees
I do most
stuff?
Of merit. So Nigel kind of runs Vanderhoof.
Okay.
And his baby. Me and Elfie still pretty involved in merit too. So we kind of, I guess you would say, look after that end of things.
Right.
We go up there, we crop 3 times a year. We go up in the spring, we're doing a little bit of reseeding every year, just kind of with the acres we grew up there, we try to reseed about 80 to 100 acres a year up there.
Okay,
so,
that's all in alfalfa.
Yeah, kind of an alfalfa grass blend.
Okay.
So.
You guys don't do any straight alpha-alpha?
Up there?
Yeah. Is it all, it's all blended? Or?
Yeah.
Because like I love the blends that I get, but lots of these bigger guys, if you're bigger than 40 cows, you just want to blend it yourself in the commodity shed, right? You don't want to have a, you know, a bale that's half Timothy, half alpha-alpha, and the next one's mostly alpha-alpha.
Yeah, no, no. So it's, we grow a, I think it's an alfalfa orchard grass blend. I'd have to, we're just, I still had an order come through the other
just
day.
Just fills out the land nicely.
Yeah, it just, some, you know, like some of the drier spots in the fields, the alfalfa, you know, or actually the wetter spots even, the alfalfa will die out.
Yeah.
And then the grass at least comes through, you still get something off of it. It's like up there, if you don't have water, it's probably very similar to you guys. If you don't have water, nothing grows.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that's all irrigated at Merritt.
Yeah,
there,
it's all irrigated, so.
But you're, it's a lot different than here, right? Here you guys have, how many acres do you guys have here on this
six,
location?
Like at Riverbed?
Yeah.
About, we farm 150.
Oh yeah, and that's irrigated too, which is uncommon, right?
Well, we only, well, we have a pivot on about 70 acres.
Oh, okay,
that,
yeah.
And then the other 80 is not irrigated.
Right, but you guys get 5 or 6 cuts a year, right? With this grass side, like take us through the, like let's say you grow a corn crop and then you plant a
cover crop.
A cover crop, which is like a rye, right?
Yeah,
like
it's a winter wheat blend with ryegrass.
Right, and then in the spring you'll take that cover crop off.
Take that cover crop off, plant corn. So we actually don't grow any grass silage.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, no, we are all corn and cover crop.
Is that, but you get your grass silage from your other location, or where do you get your grass silage from? You
don't
feed
grow any grass silage. So we, our grass silage for the year is our cover crop.
Huh.
Yeah. So.
But a lot of other guys will grow.
A lot of guys will grow grass silage for their year. And it's a way they get rid of manure kind of throughout the summer too. For us, we're pretty good for storage. So once our corn's in the ground, we don't get rid of manure till fall.
Wow.
So we're kind of looking at some options of ways. Now we will gun once in a while on our corn, and we're looking at maybe one of those new Cadman silver reels, which if you haven't seen them, look them up. It would be a neat way to drag manure on corn without dragging the hose. Yeah, it goes up and down the same row, and then you've got a big boom that knuckles on your tractor. So you do one pass and then spin around and turn around and come back, but your hose stays in the same row. So you don't wreck, you only wreck a little bit of corn on your headlands.
Okay, yeah.
So that's something we're looking at, of a way to maybe get rid of some manure through the summer and just save us volume that has to go on in the fall. Because that's always a problem. If we had a real wet fall, you could have a real wreck. You've got to go put out, you know, a lot of gallons an acre. I won't say the number, but, and if it's wet already, then.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I know. Yeah.
It's just tough.
And you guys have really strict regulations as to how much and when you can spread it.
It's definitely clamped down, you know,
more than the prairies,
I would imagine,
right?
Yeah,
because we get no rain ever.
Yeah, so you know, in regards to, or difference to what you guys have, I'm not sure, but it's not like, you know, pumping manure is not a stressful thing here that you're worried about being within all these parameters. It's,
well, if you've got lots and it's the middle of winter, then it is, but...
Yeah, so we're totally fine for storage. We're,
yeah.
You know, we can make it from October to March, and we can make it from June to October, so...
Right.
Not to say our pits aren't pretty full by then, which means a lot of gallons to go out, but our nutrient levels are all still fine, so for now it works.
And how many, like, tons per acre does the corn do and the grass do here? Because you guys have, like, 14-foot corn. It's insane.
I think... Corn was 24 ton.
No, that's crazy.
I think we did the math on. I don't know, we just got a scale this year, so we weighed everything and kind of as a way to kind of track our usage a bit more throughout the year so that we're not getting into August and being out of corn.
Yeah.
So we try. Right now, I think we're feeding around 70 pounds, and we seem to be good within those numbers.
Yeah.
So that seems to work for us.
See your kids coming. I think we better end this. So. Thanks for coming on the podcast, and have a good day further, Greg.
Thanks, Beth.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Faraway Farm Boy podcast, episode number 23 with Greg Struker. with Cedar Brink Dairy. Give us a follow on our Faraway Farm Boy podcast Facebook page and join me again next week.